Welcome to Car Free Conversation. This is a podcast where we talk about making the most of things without the use of a car. I'm Domenico.
And I'm Sumitra.
And with us today, we have Toby, who is one of our newest Car Free St. Pete committee members. Hi, Toby.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. Hey, Toby, can you say your last name for me?
I never Von Koth.
Say it again.
Von Koth.
Von Koth.
Yes.
Really cool last name. I like it. It sounds like a video game character, which I like. So you're listening to Radio St. Pete on Sunshine 90.7, if you're tuning in. We are going to first have a little icebreaker and talk about St. Pete and international transit trivia. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about Car Free St. Pete and Toby's journey with Car Free St. Pete Committee. Well, I guess we should get started on this trivia. Sumitra, why don't you get us started?
Sure. So Toby, some of these questions may have options, some of them may not. So get ready. So the first one, what can be found in St. Petersburg, Florida? It's like a fantastical thing can be found here. The options are Holy Grail, Lost City of Gold, Atlantis, or Fountain of Youth.
I'm going to go with Fountain of Youth.
Yeah. It's the most plausible.
All right.
Do you remember seeing it? It's near USF. Have you ever seen it?
I was actually mostly at the USF Tampa campus, but I've only had a couple of classes at the St. Pete. I just remember something from maybe a history class of Ponce de Leon and his search for the Fountain of Youth.
So. Yeah.
Okay, the second question is, Tennessee Williams' modern classic play, A Streetcar Named Desire, was named after an actual public transit line whose terminus station was Desire Street in this American city.
Does this one have options?
I can give you options. Was it A, Memphis, B, Los Angeles, C, New Orleans, or D, Miami?
Can I do a 50-50? I want to say maybe LA just because it's a bigger area, but I'm kind of partial to either Memphis or New Orleans.
It is New Orleans.
Is it? Oh, nice. Okay.
Desire Street is also like a very New Orleans name.
It is kind of, right? I can't imagine that street being anywhere in any other city. I had to come up with those cities on the fly because we didn't have options. That's why it took me a second. I had to reread the question because I was like, did the question say it was specifically in the South? Or? We'll say you got it. Say you got it. New Orleans, you got it.
Thanks.
When was the St. Petersburg Shuffleboard Club founded? Wow, can't speak today. Let's do this again. When was the St. Petersburg Shuffleboard Club founded? They're celebrating a big year this year.
A big year this year?
Yeah.
100 years? So is that 1924?
Yeah.
I'll do that. Oh, nice. All right. Cool. Thanks for the helpful hint. Because I'm choosing either 50 or 100. And I just thought, they've probably been here later than that.
It's actually the oldest and largest shuffleboard club in the world.
Yeah.
Is it? Interesting. Here in St. Petersburg. Wow.
Yeah. He would later go on to co-found Standard Oil with John D. Rockefeller. But this American industrialist was known for developing the Florida East Coast Railway, which extended as far south as Key West. This is some Florida trivia. I feel like Florida has to know this. So.
Yeah. It's, is it Flagler?
Yeah, you got it. Okay. Henry Flagler.
Yeah.
Wow, you're acing this.
I ask about the villains one? You can strip that credit away from me then.
According to local legend, how did the founders of St. Petersburg decide on a name for the city?
I'm not exactly sure how they decided on it. I think I remember it, one of them being St. Petersburg and the other one being Detroit, maybe.
You got that.
But I'm not exactly sure how that came about.
They did a coin toss.
It was literally fully
Okay.
tough.
For real,
Really
yeah.
great decision-making strategy they had back then.
Interesting.
That's at least the legend.
Good to know. That's interesting.
This city is home to Africa's only subway system.
Oh, wow. Subway system. I'm really terrible at this. Maybe it could be. I'm going to guess Egypt. Is that?
It is in Egypt. It's Cairo. Yeah.
Is it Cairo? Okay. Nice.
St. Petersburg is known as the birthplace of commercial aviation because it is the home of the first commercial flight. When did this flight occur?
Oh
This one is hard. I
this
wouldn't
was
know
my.
this.
Is this going to be in the 1920s or 10s or 30s, somewhere around there?
Those are like three different decades.
What?
So we should draw the line in the
Okay. I will choose
sand
I'm going to choose a decade. I'll put it at the tens, the teens.
Yeah, it was 1914, January 1,
14.
1914.
Okay, and let me guess, they landed at Janus Landing.
I think, yeah, they
That's
flew from there to Tampa.
right, cool. Yeah, Janus Landing to Tampa.
And they named Janet's Landing after,
Right.
right, which is now Janet's Live,
All right, I
apparently.
didn't realize they changed the name to Janus Live. That's neat.
Rebranding, I think, but it's still the same place. Although I have to say, if you've been there recently, they've sort of cleaned it up a little bit, and they sort of like built some walls and stuff to sort of make the area for the concerts a little bit more contained. And it feels a little different. And last time I went, I said I couldn't smell the hot garbage that you used to be able to smell, because and I miss it. I feel like if you're not smelling hot garbage while you're seeing a concert in Janet's Landing, then you're not really in Janet's Landing. But if you go there now, it's a different experience. It's a much more, it's a much more professional experience when you go there now.
Changing tastes of millennials.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, when I used to go to concerts, it was like, the state theater didn't have air conditioning. It was hot and sweaty. Nobody cared. It was all about music, but I guess,
Yeah, I remember the going to concerts at the State Theater like a couple decades ago. It's back when they had like unfinished flooring or whatever. I'm sure it's like a little now. So it's a much, much nicer, much better experience, more comfortable experience anyway.
Yeah, it's at least more comfortable. What famous artist has a museum devoted to his work in St. Petersburg?
Repeat the question one more time.
What famous visual artist
Oh.
has a museum devoted to his work in St. Petersburg?
Would that be the Dalí, Salvador Dalí?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, that's a throwaway question.
It is. It really is.
Fueled by Henry Ford's efforts in cheap gasoline, Transit's profitability plummeted through the 1920s. But this American city was ahead of its time when it launched the very first municipal railway system in 1912. What is the city?
1912. Is it a large city?
Ish, large-ish.
Large-ish. Might need a hint. Is it in the Midwest?
Not.
No, it's not.
For America, it's a large city. I feel. We should disagree.
It Philadelphia?
No, it's San Francisco.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Here in Pinellas County, our transit pass is called the Flamingo Card. In Seattle, it's the Orca Card. In Bangkok, it's called the Rabbit Card. And a few episodes ago, we mentioned Hong Kong's Octopus Card. What international city offers transit riders an Oyster Card?
London.
Yeah. Wow. I think we got all of them.
Yes.
Well,
Like, so
ish.
I'll take away the New Orleans one that I have rather soon.
Wow.
So what is this, 9 out of 10?
Yeah, you win nothing. Sorry. But good job. You're just tuning in, this is Car Free Conversation. We are talking with Toby Von Kopp today about his journey with Car Free St. Pete. Toby, tell us about your journey with the Car Free St. Pete Committee. What motivated you to join, and how do you participate in the Car Free St. Pete Committee?
Well, I yeah, thank you for having me on here. I recently joined the Car Free St. Pete Committee just a few months ago, I guess back in I'm missing this up with the BPAC. Was it February or so? February or January-ish, early
Yes.
spring. I interned with Nicole Roberts last year for one of my classes at USF, and as part of an internship program, and I just it really enjoyed the work that she did with the city of St. Petersburg in promoting car-free activities, and I just figured I'd apply later on when applications were open. So that's mostly how I stuck around. Well, I mean, I kept in contact with her pretty much through summer and fall, but yeah, that's pretty much how I got here.
Well, as soon as you joined, you started getting heavily involved in the events and activities that we organize. What are some of your favorite activities that you've already participated in?
One of my favorite, I would say probably the there was a vacation series where cycling was included over in Tampa. I really enjoyed that. It was a chance for people in the St. Petersburg area to utilize the Cross Bay Ferry as a means for getting between Tampa and St. Petersburg. And because it was bike oriented, we could take our bikes onto the Cross Bay Ferry, which is really convenient, and cycle around the downtown area over there. But then also, I remember some of the guests had the opportunity to use some of the micro-mobility options, like the Lime bikes, the electric Lime bikes that were available in Tampa, and I guess over here in St. Pete also. So just really exploring that area. I'm not usually cycling around the downtown Tampa area, so it was nice to, go past, the University of Tampa area, and then, Channelside and Curtis Hickson Park, and just really utilize the bike lanes I have there. There's a lot more bike lanes than I imagined. So that would probably be one of my favorite activities with the Car Free St. Pete.
And as
It was.
someone who has, go ahead, Dom.
No, I was just agreeing with him. It was a real, I went on that as well. It was very
Yeah.
great, great. Nicole did organizing the Tampa Bay Downtown Partnership worked with us, and it really was a fantastic event. And we're hoping to do more in the future. So stay tuned if you're listening.
Yeah, I was sorry to miss that event. I was really looking forward to it. Toby, as someone who has been a bike messenger, how has that lived experience informed your work as a bicycling advocate?
I would say it's
Well, first,
definitely to know the city a lot more. I mean, I've been around here for a long time, but I never really explored downtown St. Petersburg as it is in its like a modern revival, like post 2015, really until I started doing bicycle messenger work in the downtown area around 2018 or 2019, somewhere around there. I just noticed it's a lot easier to recognize landmarks when you're going at a slower pace on bike. And you get that ability to, focus on some details that you might miss if you were just, driving by at 40 miles an hour. So as far as advocacy goes, I've actually been asked pretty frequently, even now after all these years of doing it, that by customers that they're surprised they show up on bike to their door delivering whatever it is that they ordered. And that's usually my plug for, advocating that St. Pete's a changing city, and it's definitely grown since the old days of when Baywalk started back in 2002 around that area. I think it's called Sundial now, but yeah, it's a lot more bike friendly, and there's also a lot more options outside of just driving. The pedestrian facilities like bump outs on sidewalks have gotten a lot more have improved significantly, and that's of course had an effect on biking too. It's just been a lot safer for everyone else that's using different modes of transit now. So
Yeah, and
that's.
that's such an important part of like spreading the quote unquote gospel of like
Yeah.
car free living in St. Pete, right? Like it's like that it's doable, and like once you start doing it, you start finding ways to do it, and which is a really important part of like telling people that they can join us doing the same thing.
Yeah. I really push forward too, because especially I do a lot of packages from restaurants, that kind of delivery, food delivery, and a lot of the customers are surprised about the timeliness that I get there. And I always mention, there's a lot easier to get between spots downtown when you're not driving and having to look for parking, and then walking back and forth to your car from wherever you're going. You can just really pull right up to whatever establishment you want to get to, and there's usually a bike rack within a few feet of the entranceway, so it's actually really convenient. And yeah, even with the apartment complexes downtown too, I really appreciate the fact that bicycle parking facilities and amenities are really highlighted in a lot of the newer developments. I'm not sure if that was a newer criteria by the St. Petersburg Parking and Transportation Division, but that's definitely an improvement from some of the older apartment complexes that I've seen downtown. So I definitely advocate for getting around using a bike if you can downtown, because most of the facilities are there for you.
Yeah, that is really nice. As the city continues to grow, it's, parking and driving on downtown is just only going to be more cumbersome, So, I love that you're ahead of the curve and you're a pioneer of that type of living. Yeah, I hear it all the time. People are like, oh, I don't want to go downtown because of the I don't want to have to look for parking. And, I always say like, well, there are other options. You don't have to drive there. We're lucky to live in a pretty, you can be car free in St. Pete. It's definitely doable, especially if you live, around the downtown town core. I mean, I have friends that live in Feather Sound and I'm like, well, it's a little bit more difficult up there, Toby, in your opinion, what are some of the key benefits of promoting a car-free living in urban areas like St. Pete?
Well, two immediately come to mind. One is the health benefits. You are cycling, you're getting physically active, even if you're using some of the newer modes like e-bikes. That is, still considered physical activity, because you're not sitting in a car stagnant. So there's that aspect to it. So the health aspect is definitely one. I actually lost about 20 pounds when I initially started cycling, just from the cardiovascular activity that's involved with it, and I've just maintained that weight ever since then for, I guess, a couple of years. So that's the obvious factor, the health aspect. And then also there's an economic sense where you're not really using your car a whole lot with wear and tear, so maintenance is definitely not as frequent when you're not using your car. I own a car, so I mean, I still have to use it to get around the Tampa Bay area. But when I can, or especially when I'm doing things in the downtown St. Pete area, I do prefer to use my bike or some of the e-scooters. So there's that economic sense to it too. The cost of car ownership is pretty expensive.
Yes.
So yeah.
I feel like your first reason should be reason enough for people
For
to
many
go
people, yeah.
cross-country. I mean, I have so many friends, and myself included, that are like, trying to be in better shape or trying to lose weight. There's some of that stubborn fat that holds on. And the fact that you just said you lost 20 pounds just getting around is pretty impressive, I think. I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, you really don't have to exert that much energy. I mean, if you really were just on an e-bike doing your daily errands, even a couple times a week, three even, that's a lot more physical activity than, the majority of people that live in the suburbs are getting. Most of us would have to like drive out to get to a gym in order to get our exercise quota for the day in, because we're not like, walking around or doing really anything physically active at all. We're pretty sedentary. But yeah, just going around in town on an e-bike can do actually a significant be a significant benefit for you.
And I like that you mentioned that you have a car and you do use it. A car-free lifestyle can look different, look different for different people. It doesn't mean just, getting rid of your car and just living car-free. It means having options. And I like that you mentioned that and you talk about how you use a car to get certain things done, but you have a car-free lifestyle that you use your bicycle to get around as much as possible.
Yeah, for sure.
Toby, as a committee member, how do you engage with local residents, businesses, and government agencies to promote car-free living? Like, I know you are, you interned with Nicole, and you're part of the Car-Free St. Pete committee now. Do you do anything else outside of those, like outside of the committee where you promote car-free living?
Mostly at my job, but I'm also on the City of St. Petersburg's Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. I think Haley Bush is also on the committee as well. So we usually sync a lot of our activities between that and Car Free St. Pete. But as far as promoting it, like on my own, most of it is just door to door. With my interactions with most customers, it's pretty frequent, actually, even after all these years and the thousands of people that I've seen, sometimes repeat customers. It's that's usually my chance to do it, and it actually happens very naturally. It's usually initiated by them. But now that I'm on the committee, I can ask that question: are you familiar with Car-Free St. Pete? And then get things rolling even further, especially being involved with the activities that we have on the roster. I can at least promote those as I'm going, with events that people can tune into or have a heads up for. So it's usually how it goes. Yeah,
They
I
need to
take
get those flyer car-free flyers to staple to their order.
Oh yeah. A little cross promotion there. Staple with every package sent out.
Toby, so I know you spent a lot of time in Japan, so we obviously have to talk about that. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like living in Japan? And I'm assuming that you went car free when you're in Japan.
Mostly, yeah. Well, I did not get a rental car. Obviously, I don't have my international driver's license. But when I flew in actually to Narita Airport, which is kind of like on the outskirts of the greater Tokyo city area, metropolitan area. And in order to get to the downtown area, I normally you would take a train. I didn't realize this because also I flew in very late, and it was like I didn't realize that a lot of their transit systems pretty much end around midnight. They don't have a very thriving nightlife, oddly. So I ended up taking a taxi from the airport to get downtown, and that was probably the most expensive part about my trip, because I think it was somewhere around like 200, $250 is what I ended up spending. On the way back, though, when I was leaving, I ended up taking transit. I took a train that went to I think it's called like the Narita Express, back to the airport, and that was like $40 or so. So it was a huge difference. But other than that, yeah, I got around mostly by by foot, subway. I took the high speed Shinkansen, the bullet train, and by e-bike. And I was and actually my first experience on an e-bike was in Japan. So that was actually nice. Nice to experience before the e-bikes came to St. Pete a few years back. So
That's cool. Where did you take the Shinkansen to?
I took it to, I believe, Kyoto and Hiroshima and then back to Tokyo. So along that route. I can't remember the name of the line, but it was that was all within one line. Which was a huge, it felt like flying in business class domestically. Or first class domestically or business class internationally. That's exactly what it felt like. I ended up upgrading my ticket to the green car, which is a little bit of a a little bit more of a nicer experience, less seats per row. But I believe the majority of their seats are like a 3-3-2 layout, and the green car that I was in, like the business class, it was 2-2. So it was still nice. It's pretty much what you get in the Brightline layout, Miami and Orlando, a 2-2 layout. But yeah, it was spacious. It felt like an IMAX theater movie seat. It's just convenient that the Wi-Fi at the time it wasn't that great on there on the train. I don't think the train provided its own Wi-Fi, but I had a travel Wi-Fi pocket Wi-Fi that I used. But yeah, for the most part, it was convenient. I got a lot of things done. It was a good way to rest for like 2 hours. I'm sure if we drove, it would be like four. So taking the train was a lot quicker. And also the experience of the speed. It was it's definitely dizzying at first when you're looking out the window. I'm not used to seeing the speeds. Like you can tell what it looks like when you're about 60, 70, 80 miles an hour just because we're so used to driving around Florida or anywhere really in this country. But when it starts going beyond that, like beyond 90 miles an hour, it can be a little unnerving. But it's so quiet and smooth. That's probably one of my biggest takeaways from that inconvenience. So that was definitely one of the best experiences I've had taking transit.
I long for the day for us to have high-speed transit between our cities. Like that would be.
Yeah, I think the closest shot we have is that option that could potentially get there, the one between Dallas and Houston, which would be using the same train sets as the Japanese Shinkansen uses. But I don't know where that the phases and planning with that project's going, and if it's going to be actually coming to fruition or not.
My hometown in India is getting one of those Japanese Shinkansen sets. And it starts in like a couple of years, so I can't wait to like visit to use it at some point.
Yeah, that would be really exciting to see. And that obviously like the I thought it looked like a really bizarre duck bill platypus. The first time I saw it, I couldn't believe it was true. Like, wow, here it is, it's coming, it's at me. I feel like such a tourist.
Was it like the green and white livery, or was it like the other, like the white and blue?
I ended up using the white and blue one. Yeah. And I was looking everywhere for it on the platform. I wasn't exactly sure where it was coming. And I remember my friend was, "Here it comes, Toby, here it comes." And I turned, I saw it, and it was, I don't know if it was just theatrical, but there was mist. There's something coming. It wasn't a surprise. It was just been a foggy day. But yeah, it's an electric train, but when it came through, I could not believe it. I felt like it was a ride at Disney World or Universal Studios, but it was real. And it was, there were not that many safety features that you would find at like the Disney World. So it was very raw. It was a very raw experience that I'll never forget.
If you ever have the chance to read about how they engineered that beak on the train, it's really fascinating because I was reading about how when they first their very first train were very loud because of the way it would just because of the way it would pick up moving so quickly, it would make like a boom as it sort of like broke the air in front of it. I don't know the exact scientific terms. Apologize to anyone listening who is like an acoustic scientist. But they had this problem that it would make this really loud boom when it, as soon as it left the station. And so the engineers turned to nature and found, they studied the kingfisher, which is a bird, and it dives, very quickly. It like dive bombs into the water to get its prey. And they were studying just how it was able to to be so aerodynamic and not really cause a splash when it entered the water or anything like that. And that's why it has like a beak, basically, because they like sort of emulated the design of the.
Yeah, I don't have a physics background, but I do remember something about the fact that like airways, as soon as it leaves a tunnel, you might get the booming noise at that point. And given the terrain of Japan, how mountainous it is, there's a lot of tunnels. I remember being on that train, and some of them are actually pretty long considering the speed that you're going, and you're like in a tunnel for 6 minutes. Like when how long is this tunnel? But yeah, it's pretty frequent with the amount of times it pops out. So I can imagine that being a nuisance for maybe people that might live along the line. But it's nice to see that that was one engineering method to mitigate the concerns of people who would be affected by the line.
Well, shall we go into our car-free scorecard activity for each other?
Yes, so this is a new activity that we are trying out with Toby, and I'm very excited for this. So we'll each select a transportation system outside of Florida that we have kind of a good amount of experience with. We are going to each give that each transportation system a score between 1, which stands for very poor, to 5, which is stellar, with reasoning for each of the categories below. So I guess this is how we should do it. I guess we should like pick a category and then like each. So first, let's each name a system that we want to rank, and then we each will go through each of the categories. Does
I'll
that
take
sound good to you?
Sounds great.
yeah, that sounds great. I did this on an index card so that I can take I don't think there's a point of it, but I'm just gonna keep score.
Yeah, sure.
What city are you gonna pick to me?
I'm choosing Chicago since I'm here.
I'll do New York. I lived in New York for a few years, New York and New Jersey area.
I was most recently in Los Angeles, so I will choose the LA Metro.
Right.
So our first category is about the system, the public transit system, stops and stations.
So are we doing the are we do so public transportation system is the category, and then all these items that you've listed here are describing are all
Yeah.
the elements, but we're just scoring the public transit system as a whole.
Or should we score like each of the subcategories? We should score each of the
Okay,
subcategories,
you're, hey, this is your Peter's invention, so I will not trample for your design. If you want to do each and every one of those, I'm ready.
mean, so that like it's then more nuanced than just scoring like the transportation system.
Oh, and then we're and then I'm subtotaling them, I guess. I
Yeah.
can do that. I can do that. All right,
So
so this, go ahead.
the first subcategory is stops and stations. So how many stops does the transit system have, and like how are the stations?
So, are we going in an order? Do you want to go first, Demetra? Why don't we do Demetra with Chicago, New
Sure.
York?
Okay. I would score. So I'm going to combine CTA and Metra. CTA is the metro system, and then Metra is the regional transit system where we use heavy rail between all of the suburbs around Chicago. And Metra actually goes through three states. So it serves Illinois, Wisconsin, and Indiana because of like how large it is. I'm going to score it 4.
Okay. All right. So I'm doing New York City. So we're talking about the stops and the stations. The one nice thing about New York is that, most of the stations are underground. Now in the summer, that can be pretty brutal because it's like a sauna, but for the most part, the stations are pretty nice. And there are some quite beautiful ones, like Grand Central is a beautiful station, right? So, and that has lines to, suburbs in like Connecticut. It can take you out of the city. For the time that I lived in Jersey, I would, the bus, the, first of all, the New Jersey transit system was very nice. I mean, they have like these very plush buses that will take you into New York City. Now, the station that they would drop you off at, though, was the Port Authority, which is one of the worst
The Penn
stations.
Station, yeah.
But I still think it deserves at least a 4, to be honest. I'll give it a 4. Yeah, I'll give it a 4 for the whole system.
Are we just talking about the train sets themselves, or like the buses as they related to the
I think we are including buses as well.
All the whole all transit. Yeah, because the Port Authority is a bus. Well, the bus station and there's subway underneath. So I was considering the bus station.
I guess I'm doing the LA Metro. I've only used parts of the LA Metro, mostly in the Hollywood area, out to Santa Monica and Venice. But I would give it, based on what we have here in St. Pete and Tokyo, I'll give it a 4, a 4 out of 5. So
Very generous of you. I can tell it.
it's definitely not, Asian in that sense, but it's frequent enough, I think. The subway system, a few of them were above ground, but the majority of the line that I was on was underground. The stations themselves were, they were spacious, but they were kind of dusty. They were pretty dirty, depending on your stop. Obviously, the closer towards the downtown LA area you got, the cleaner the stations were, and you would visually see maintenance people doing their thing. But overall, I'd say a 4 because as soon as you get out, the stations are within walking distance and they're really connected to the bus lines. And I think there's the Metro State Agency itself has their own bike share program, and some are electric and some are regular bicycles. And those are usually at every exit. So the connectivity from train to bus or a bike is actually pretty solid and convenient. So I'll give it a 4.
Okay. The next one is Waco.
Sorry,
What's
go ahead.
that?
I was gonna say, we were talking about cleanliness, then New York City gets like a 1 because most of the
Yeah,
stations
like
are pretty
same. Yeah.
gross.
Yeah. If you're talking about cleanliness, then Chicago would get like 1,
Yeah.
probably.
I've seen some pretty horrific things in New York City
Yeah,
subway stations
same,
that I will
same.
never forget. So, in fact, one
Same.
of my pastimes was while I would wait for my train, if it was at night, I would watch the rat like weave through the subway station and try to avoid getting too close to them.
Yikes.
Our second category is vehicles. I would give this for CTA and Metra and the buses. I would say 4. Like we have some really modern metros, like the train cars. The Metro trains are actually really nice. They have introduced bike cars on the trains where you can store up to like 50 bikes in one car. The buses are kind of nice. There are a bunch of electric buses now in the system. We have lots of vestibule buses, which I love. One of them services my area, so I can go from downtown to home on this like express bus. So yeah, I would say about four vehicles as well.
I'm going to give New York City a 3, to be honest. If I was considering the, now the New Jersey Transit buses were very nice. But pretty much all the vehicles on the MTA in New York City were a 3 at best, I would say. Actually, you know what? I'm going to give them a 2. I'm getting like flashbacks of like the smells of some of the subway stations and the buses are not very comfortable. I'm going to give them a solid. Sorry, New York.
What was the subcategory title?
Vehicles.
The vehicles. Okay. For LA, I'll give it a 3, mainly because the train sets that I was using those were they were pretty old. They looked dusty and rusty. The glass on the inside, the windows were just not that clean or transparent. So it was losing some touch. But the buses, the buses were your typical, articulated ones, the accordion style looking buses. So compared to St. Pete, that's a huge upgrade. So it gets a higher score of 3, but compared to other cities, it's just, so many other cities have those. So it's nothing really that special. So a 3.
Okay, the next category is access to community. How easily can riders use the system to get to work, to shop, etc.? Where I live and where I work, I'm really blessed, but I'm going to give this a 3. Even though Chicago has a really robust bus network that connects all the train lines and the metro stations, we still need, like, it's a hub and spoke network. So you still usually need to get downtown to then go out to some other place, which is just not sustainable. So we need that outer loop pronto. So I'm going to give this like a 3.
For this one, I'm actually going to give New York City a 5. You can get anywhere in the city using their transit system. You really can. Now, how long it will take you, if you do the math, if you really do the math and you do the distance, like this is a mile away, it should take me, whatever, 15 minutes. It doesn't. It actually takes a very long time to traverse fairly short distances, but I'm going to give them a 5 because you can get anywhere on the system, really.
I mean, yeah, same thing in Chicago. You can get anywhere on the public transit, but it can take a long time because you have to maybe change two buses or take a train and then a bus and a bus, or take a train and a bus and a train. So that's why I was like, okay, I think this is 3.
I think for LA, I would give their connectivity I want to say 4, but maybe a 3.5, between 3 and 4, so 3.5. And that's mainly because, well, the frequency was all right. It was okay. Using the transit app, I think you can pretty much get anywhere that you need to. And most of the things that you want to get to anyway are usually along a transit corridor of some sort. But if not, at the end of the stations, of course, since they provide scooters from different companies, and then they have their own branded metro bikes for bike share programs, I think that pretty much gets you to your little last mile bit very easily. And considering just the layout, I don't recall there being many bike lanes exactly where I was traveling, but given the layout of the roads, it almost felt like St. Pete's neighborhood greenways, sort of, where you could bike on the street just fine. So I'd give it like 3.5. Did we lose Donnie?
I don't know what's going on with the microphone. I'm back. I was joking that we're only doing whole numbers.
Oh, sorry. Then 4.
Okay.
Next one is frequency. I am going to give Chicago a 4 on this one. We have two train lines that run overnight. So they run 24/7. The frequency can be dicey at night, but that's, they still run maybe probably every 15 to 20 minutes at night. During the peak hours, the train can be every 4 to 5 minutes. There have been, because of the pandemic and like there were like, some cuts in the frequency, but they're kind of trying to get it back to the normal service. So I'm going to give it 4.
I'll give New York a 4 as well. It's a similar situation, I think. Honestly, trying to use the subway at night is, the frequency does drop quite a bit. So, yeah, it'll take a lot. You're going to get home in the morning, basically. They do run. They run, but it's very.
I agree with you guys on the points about the frequency at night, because that was an issue that I ran into also when I was out in LA. But the majority of my trips were made during the day. So if I'm gonna grade it for like someone who's vacationing or visiting the city, yeah, I was actually surprised how well you can get around Los Angeles without having a car. So in my mind, I was just thinking it's a car city. But yeah, the transit's actually not that bad. I would give it a 4. Use the transit app, and it gives you live locations of the buses coming. And the wait times are about like maybe 7 to 15 minutes for the trains. For, I guess, an American city, that's pretty good. I mean, relating back to our own transit system here, PSTA, I'm out in the suburbs. I can wait between 45 minutes to an hour for one. So anything above that, it's good for me. But of course, compared to countries outside the US, anything outside the US, it's not that great. But we'll just give it a 4 because for LA, I think it's good.
Okay, next one, planning. I'm not sure, I mean, how to grade this, but I would say I'm giving Chicago a 4 in planning, even though we need that outer loop. Like, both our airports are connected via trains. The trains interact with each other quite often, they interact with buses very often. We have this like street that cuts across like the city of Chicago, north to south, called Western Avenue. And there are at least six train stations throughout because like different lines kind of intersected at different latitudes. And so like there are at least like six Western stations in the CTA map. So yeah, I think I'm gonna give it 4.
I think I'm gonna give it a 4 too. I was thinking, when I was thinking about planning, I was thinking about sort of some of the like the promises that the MTA would have about future stops and routes and it was very thoughtfully planned. So I would say I'm gonna say 4.
Planning for Los Angeles. I haven't read that much on what they're doing, but from what I can tell, the network, like many other American cities, it used to be a lot bigger than what it is today. But they are restoring a couple of lines that are pretty important with connecting the international airport LAX to some of their more popular neighborhoods. So I think for that, I would give them a 4. There's a couple of express bus routes that I think I used getting to the airport that were convenient. I think they just recently opened up a new, I can't remember the name of the line, but it was yellow, the yellow line in LA. So that and with new stations, I think they're pretty good at planning a more robust network that gets you around the greater LA county, like holistically. I think the planning is pretty good for that. with their proposed lines. So four, yeah.
Okay, next one is virtual access, so the transit app. The Ventra app, which is what the CTA uses, where you can buy passes, tickets for the metro trains. I would give it a five. You can do a lot with it. It works pretty well. Just a regular transit app has the CTA data as well, which is pretty good. Yeah, so I'd give it a five.
So I never used the app when I was in New York City. It's possible that they did not have an app when I lived there. It was like 10 years ago. Well, about that, but it was a while ago. So I think I have to abstain from this one if I can. I don't know what app they developed since then. I've heard that they do have an app. I don't know. I've never used it, so I can't judge it.
Is this one judging a specific app that the
Like
transit agency uses?
how transit app.
Or just like how it relates to, like how it integrates well with other apps like transit app?
I think both.
Oh, all of it. Okay, like yeah, I would give LA a five on that, mainly because their transit app is pretty decent, or like with reloading cards, you could have it digitally. Like we have the Flamingo card that is also available through your phone, your Apple Wallet, or whatever Android that you have. And it also, if you didn't have that, it also takes, regular Apple Pay or Android. I'm not sure what Android's called, but it takes that too. So I thought that was pretty convenient. Compared to Tokyo, I mean, I had to buy a paper ticket every single time when I was going, but I know the locals had something on their phone that they used, but I don't know if I had access to that or not, but I always had to pay through a ticketing machine. But Los Angeles also has that too. And I think the one thing I like about there is that the Flamingo system here in Pinellas County doesn't have is that they have like their cards that they're almost like collector items. They sometimes signify different events or different things that are happening around, and it's just nice to have that like uniqueness in the cards that collect the whole set. So I like that aspect about it. I mean, our Flamingo card's pretty it's pretty also, but it doesn't have that variety, so there's that too. So yeah, the convenience of using it. And also I just noticed the transit app was actually pretty accurate with the LA Metro, whereas the Google using Google just was not. And I also noticed that when I was out in Tokyo too, the Google app was okay over there, but wasn't as accurate when I was around LA. So connectivity using the transit app was definitely great, but I almost feel like non-transit enthusiasts wouldn't really be aware of the existence of the transit app. So it might be a little bit difficult, but I'll still give it a five just because the ways to pay was pretty good.
We have two more categories left,
Yeah.
and we're going to close it after that. Communications. I would give CTA three in this. They are really good at like sending out alerts whenever something is happening at any of the stations with any of the lines. And they're really good with sending that information out with like local like newspapers and on Twitter as well. So yeah, I would say three.
I'm going to give New York a four. I do remember that whenever a line was down, which happened,
Yeah.
everybody would know, like we would know, and they would always divert you to an alternative route. And they always had the route coordinated so that there was always another route you could take. They always did a good job at that. I'm not going to give it a full five because whenever I think of communication, I also think of the communication of like the conductor when he communicates or they communicate with passengers. And I could never understand what they, never understand what they were saying. It was like listening to the parents on the Peanuts cartoons. I can never figure out what they were saying. So it can't give them a five. So I'll give them a four though.
I haven't actually ran into issues when I was out there. It's just kind of hard to say. I do have them. I follow their alerts on Twitter, but the amount of posts aren't very frequent, so that could, that could easily say that they don't have as many issues. But so I would give them maybe a four, just because a four, arbitrary.
Last one. This is operations. I would give CDA three in this as well. They have been struggling post-pandemic. They haven't hired as many people or rehired as many people. So they haven't been running all the services that they could. So yeah, so I would say three.
What's this category? Can you explain this category to me? I didn't.
Operations.
Operations. I think I'd give them a four. Yeah, I'll give them a four. Whenever there was an issue, like they were pretty organized about it. I mean, there was some pretty, yeah. It was always understandable. Like I would always hear about like a case of, someone and then jump on the tracks or something, and there was a delay. Reasonable reason for a delay, So, they did a good job of communicating and rerouting things. So I'll give them a four.
How is this category different than the last one? Last
Well,
one
I
was.
think operations is more about like if they're running all the services, like, if everything is running smoothly as it
Oh.
should. Like, are the trains arriving when they should? How many
Okay.
delays,
Gotcha.
etc.
I'll merge it with the last one then. I guess what maybe wasn't so arbitrary. I'll say a four for LA's metric. I forgot that their Instagram actually posts a lot of service updates on there too, so I forgot about that. They're actually really heavily using their social media, which is I think a lot more than PSTA's. I mean, we have our little, win some prizes or whatever campaigns are going on, but as far as like important news day, I think the fact that they use Instagram for that is important. And since Instagram is very effective at doing that, the operations and the media, that it, hand in hand, both of them will be four. Then, yeah, I'll give them a four.
Right, I ran the numbers. Is that the last one, Dimitri?
Yeah, that was the last one.
All right, so Chicago gets a 3.8. I averaged them. So Chicago gets 3.8, New York gets a 3.9, and LA gets a 4, a solid 4, which, look, I'm not here to bash any city or anything. I'm not going to say that LA's transit system is the worst or anything, but I would have not. But it's been a long time since I've ridden the LA transit system.
And also,
I'm surprised that it beat out New York and Chicago in this little activity.
it would be very different from a native
That's true. That's true.
LA
Yeah.
person too.
Well, I like
Native.
how four was surprising for all of us because that's exactly how I felt when explaining. I was very surprised about how thorough, how planned it was. So that's a shock. But also, yeah, my perspective would be as somebody visiting the place, who probably isn't a frequent transit user in the sense that some of the locals would be. So needing to find something on the spot, needing to get somewhere, how to get there really quickly, when you only give yourself 5 minutes to figure it out. I think LA does a really good job at that. It's that I don't think it's talked about enough. So that's why probably I was surprised when I went there.
And you went recently, right? This is a recent trip.
Just last summer.
Oh, yeah. So maybe they've done a lot of improvement. Did you take any of the buses or just the
I took the buses. I took like a red one and an orange one, whatever those lines are. And then for the trains, I took the red and a blue and a yellow one. And they have letters now, but I can remember the colors, which I think is important for like wayfinding.
Well, if there are any transit planners listening, that's something to note. But you remembered the colors, but not the names or the letters or the numbers. So,
You
that's
know, Tokyo
good.
was the same way too. I couldn't remember their names, even though some of them were like anglicized for, Western usage, but I can remember the colors, and that was probably more important.
Tokyo has all the different companies, right?
Well, they didn't really advertise their company logos, but colors definitely. A red circle, a yellow circle, something like that. And the trains were painted in those colors too, so that really made it easy. So.
Well, this is a fun exercise. Yeah, I love judging cities. So, judging the transit system was a fun exercise. Thank you, Samisha, for coming up with this activity. And thank you.
Actually, Nicole came up with the details of it. So, like, all credit goes to her for this.
Thank you for giving credit where it's due. Thank you, Nicole, for taking Samisha's idea and running with it. This is fun. This is fun. So thank you, Toby, for being on the our show, and welcome to the RPP community.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate being on here.
Yeah, thanks, Toby, for being on the show. We loved having you here.
Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Car Free Conversations.
Please follow us on social media. We are Car Free St. Pete on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter.